Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Now in depth on rad women your daughters and sons should know. And here's why. These are women who pioneered the written word, programmed the first electronic computer, led the Irish in a pirate rebellion, and created the Montessori method of schooling that is still practiced today. Kate Schatz writes in Rad Women Worldwide, no matter what country or century they're from, these women are passionate, purposeful, and totally powerful. In the face of doubt and danger, they defied tradition, broke rules, and kept going. They spoke up, they sang, they wrote, they fought. As Kate joins us to talk about these individual women, two things for you. A trivia question. Can you guess who the contemporary rad woman from Minnesota is in the book? And no Googling. And is there a rad woman in your family or your circle of friends? What does she do that makes her rad for you? So this is a trivia question. Can you guess who the contemporary rad woman from Minnesota is in the book? And I ask you not to Google that. And is there a rad woman in your family or your circle of friends? Maybe you're getting together with her over the Thanksgiving holiday. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Kate Schatz is a writer and creator of the Rad Women series, along with illustrator Miriam Klein Stahl. And the new book is titled Rad Women Worldwide. And she's with us today from Santa Barbara. Welcome back to the show, Kate. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Carrie. It's good to be back.
You know, I took note of the note at the end of the book where you said that working on it gave you solace in a time of great upheaval. I mean, were you talking about the election season or you know, some of the stuff that's going on worldwide?
You know, what I was talking about in the back of the book where I do write about how researching and writing the book really did, again, give me solace in a time of great turmoil. I was talking about kind of the summer and fall of 2015. So actually, before the whole election cycle, really, although that was certainly still happening, I was reacting more to the many instances of police brutality, the murders of Black and brown men and women at the hands of police, and the following protests, and also the refugee crisis that we were seeing really hit its peak around the world. So that's what I was responding to then. Now, really, sharing the book and talking about it is giving me solace in kind of new ways.
You know, I think we should also take note of the fact that your book is coming out at a time when gender was discussed in some really unpleasant and demeaning ways in the political campaign.
Absolutely.
And you're advocating for empowering girls and women. You couldn't know what was going to come up during this election campaign, but I know you've probably been thinking about where your book and the idea, the philosophy behind it fits in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, no, none of us saw this coming, did we? But, you know, many of us are not surprised, you know, for women and for men who've been fighting for equality and justice and paying attention to misogyny and racism, you know, for many years. This isn't that much of a surprise. We just got to see it in a more mainstream context. And now we've seen it be politically legitimized, which is incredibly terrifying. But it is true that I've seen, especially for young girls and young boys, but for young children who were so excited about the prospect of the first woman president and who really, really got excited about it, I think parents are finding that this book is, you know, a great book to follow up the disappointment of the election with, to show there is an incredible history of powerful, strong women who've persevered against all kinds of odds and who've still made an incredible difference and impact.
Here's what I really appreciate about the book. I didn't know. I was familiar with a lot of the women in the book. I didn't know a lot of the others. I love the fact that you held up this group of women, and is it Argentina? The women that go to the plaza every day.
Yeah,
to
the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo.
Right.
Yes. And I'm glad to hear that. You know, when people tell me that they haven't heard of most of the women in the book, they sometimes do so with a little bit of a like a shame, like, oh, I'd never heard of them. And, you know, I say that's the point of the book. I don't want you to have heard of these people. I had not heard of many of these women before I began researching the book. And that's incredibly intentional on our part. We want to be introducing readers to stories that they may have never heard before. Women who are very well known within their own country or culture, but in a Western context, in the U.S., outside of their country, they're not very recognized. So we do have women that are very well known, like Frida Kahlo and Malala Yousafzai. Mm-hmm. And we include them because, you know, we want, you know, they're on the cover of the book, and young people and adults as well will say, hey, I know who they are. And they pick up the book and then they learn about all these people that they'd never heard of.
Call here from Jim in Minneapolis. Hi, Jim. Are you answering the trivia question or are you answering just a rad woman that you know and admire a lot?
I can do both.
Okay. All right. Who is it?
Well, because you said contemporary, Carrie, I was going to go with Winona LaDuke.
It's a terrific mm-hmm. suggestion. It is not the answer to the trivia question, but Jim, it's a terrific suggestion. Winona okay. LaDuke is amazing. And Kate, I think we have to say you couldn't fit in every amazing, rad woman that you wanted to into the book. But
oh, no.
Boy, Winona LaDuke, what a great suggestion here.
She is an incredible woman.
Have you talked to her? Have you had a chance to interview her?
I have not. That would be wonderful. She was one of the women in our first book, which was Rad American Women A to Z, which focused just
right.
on women for the U.S. We actually almost had her as the W in that book, but it's so weird to say we almost had her and we used someone else. But in our first book, the W is Wilma Mankiller, another
right.
incredibly important woman in Native American and American political history.
We've
definitely have read a lot about Winona.
Two W's I've been lucky enough to interview, so
that's
cool.
Great.
You know, I also want to say that these women who appear in your book, one of the things that occurred to me is they were often not lauded in their time for the kind of accomplishments mm-hmm. and contributions that they were making. Their moment of activism seemed to have been appreciated long after they'd been involved in it. Why?
Sure. Well, I think that's the case with, you know, a lot of people that we in a contemporary moment hold up and really admire. I think it's very important to realize that many of them didn't get that recognition in the time that they were doing it. I include that information because I think in our current moment of such immediate gratification where you post a picture and you wait to see how many likes you get, you know, I want to give the context that there's a lot of people for whom that recognition, that instantaneous gratification really never came. And they were doing the work that they were doing because they loved it, because they were passionate, because they felt strongly about something, not because they wanted to immediately feel great and in their success. And I try to focus on that angle in the story I write about Frida Kahlo in particular, because she's someone who, especially for young people today, she's so famous. All the kids know who she is. In the book I write, you know, she had one art exhibit in Mexico while she was alive.
Wow. You know, I didn't
even
realize
when she died.
Yeah.
And it was a woman gallery owner who did it. But when she died, her New York Times obituary headline identified her as Diego Rivera's wife. You know, she was still very much known as, you know, Diego Rivera's kind of crazy artist wife. And it really wasn't until the 1980s and 90s when Chicana feminists kind of, quote, rediscovered her and started writing about her and talking about her, that she came to this kind of iconic status. So even someone, you know, who seems so everybody knows Frida, you know, during her lifetime, she was not recognized in the way that she is now.
You know, it's funny that you said most of the kids know Frida Kahlo. I'm a little surprised at that. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that she's become, you know, her image itself has become incredibly iconic. You know, she's almost like Che Guevara, where you see her face on posters and T-shirts and mugs and
stickers.
So
they know her image, but how much do they really mm-hmm. know about what she stood for?
That's a great question. Yeah. You know, I do think that one of the things that happens with history, especially as it's taught in schools, and I understand why this happens, but one or two figures tend to come as a stand-in to teach that an entire culture, an entire moment in time, right? So in the U.S., a lot of times Martin Luther King Jr. is the stand-in for the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
Rosa Parks is the stand-in for the woman in the entire civil rights movement. And those are two great heroes that we should all know. But in our books, we're interested in kind of pushing a little bit beyond that and showing that, you know, these movements were not led, you know, Frida Kahlo was not the only Mexican woman artist in all of history, but she's kind of the only one that a lot of American students will learn about. Rosa Parks was not the only woman active in the civil rights movement, and we think she's amazing. But in our first book, we write about Ella Baker and Odetta. And children always ask, is Rosa Parks in the book? And I say, no, and it's not because she's not incredible, but it's because we want you to know about these other women that worked alongside her and did the work as well.
Do you think to come back to the gender part of this for a minute, do you think these women faced even fiercer resistance in their activism? Now, let's just be clear. I mean, they were activists, and so they're pushing change, and that's often uncomfortable, mm-hmm. man or woman. But sure. Were they facing even fiercer resistance, many of them, because they were women pushing for this kind of change?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And not every woman in the book is an activist per se in the political sense. You know, many of them are or they found a way to be activists in their own field.
Right.
But absolutely. I mean, one of the common threads throughout the book, and again, we have women from ancient Greece and contemporary times. We really span history. One of the common threads you see is access to education. And so many of the women in the book, again, no matter which century they were in, part of their struggle was that they were not allowed to be educated.
Right.
There's a number of women from Sor Juana de la Cruz in Mexico up to Malala who sought an education but were denied it because of their gender. So that, you know, there are similar barriers that are gender-based that have existed across time and across continents.
I want to talk about the Quintrimin sisters. I'm probably not pronouncing that right. Am I?
I think it's Quintrimin.
Quintrimin,
but
okay.
It is in an ancient Mapuche language that I don't speak. So I've done my best to try to get the correct pronunciation of that.
They are part of the, as you say, indigenous Mapuche people in Chile. They were mm-hmm. opposed to a dam that was being built near their village. This is a wonderful example of we didn't set out to, and I think you were alluding to this, we didn't set out to do something that was going to change the course of history in that area, mm-hmm. although we'll talk about what happened with that, to gather, to activate our community. We found mm-hmm. ourselves in a place where we couldn't do anything else. That's one of the threads
right.
that kind of runs through this for me.
Right. Right. So the Quintrimin sisters were two very elderly sisters who were part of Chile's largest indigenous group, the Mapuche people, and they lived in the foothills of the Andes Mountains. And there was a dam that was going to be built on the river that was their sacred river. It was their ancestral home. And they ended up leading the resistance against this dam. And again, these were elderly women. These were not radical political activists their whole lives, but they were people whose land was threatened. There's a very obvious parallel with this story with what's happening with the Standing Rock tribe in North and South Dakota right now. People who weren't necessarily engaged in resistance and radical activism, but when people and corporations come to threaten your land and your water, you have no choice.
I was just thinking about that because I heard a story yesterday where somebody who was demonstrating up at the North Dakota pipeline demonstration said, mm-hmm. I'm a member of a tribe. I never really identified myself that way first until I saw everybody, so many people from different Native American tribes gathering. And it allowed me to step outside myself mm-hmm. and see myself in a different way. I think that's what happens to these women that become kind of accidental activists, like
sure.
the Quintrimin sisters.
Sure, sure. And I think a lot of times people have a perception of what an activist is or what a political person is or what a feminist is. You know, they have a specific vision of it that, and they don't see themselves included in that. So in these books, we want to give a really broad range of what activism and what resistance and what, you know, a passion for justice can look like.
Let's note that the sisters, for as hard as they tried, they weren't successful. Here's what I liked
Correct.
About the fact that you put them in the book, Kate. Failure to make the change is not failure.
Right. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And it's true. This is, to me, I'm glad you brought it up. This is one of the very important stories because the Quintrimin sisters were not able to stop the dam. It was still built. And in fact, they ended up, you know, selling their land and doing what they weren't going to do. But their activism still had an immense impact. And so I talk in the story about how though they didn't stop the dam, they totally galvanized a new environmental movement in Chile. The Chilean Congress strengthened a lot of environmental protections, and the ripple effect from their actions was enormous. So their immediate project, they did not succeed, but it had a huge impact. And I think that's another, you know, going back to, we don't always get immediate gratification from our work, you know, and we might actually fail, you know. Hillary Clinton was not elected president. And, you know, but that, it doesn't mean it's not still going to be inspirational and powerful and empowering for a lot of women and girls who now might want to enter politics, right?
I mean, you know, this is the long arc of history that Martin Luther King talks about and President Obama. I think quotes quite often, and I think that's the, maybe that's the essence of the activist who can say the change right in front of us might not be what we want. We're influencing where that, how that arc of history bends, you know, to to channel Martin Luther King on that. A phone call here. Oh, by the way, if you're, if you've just joined us, Kate Schatz is with us, and we're talking about her new book, Rad Women Worldwide, and she's the creator and the writer of the Rad Women series. Great illustrations. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I don't want to ignore the wonderful artwork that Miriam Klein Stahl contributes to this. But one of the things I'm asking for you is, can you guess who the contemporary rad woman from Minnesota is in the book? Well, this is great because we get to talk about all kinds of great rad women from Minnesota, even if you don't have the right guess. Somebody who lives now, who has really made an impact in her field. I don't want to give it away. And think about this as well. Is there a rad woman in your family or your circle of friends, or just somebody that you really deeply admire? Tell me about that. 800-242-2828-651-227-6000 and on Twitter at Carrie NPR, and Steph Curtis hanging out at nprnews.org/live to Gary in Marlboro. Gary, you have a guess. Is that right?
It's actually in Marble.
Okay. It's who?
And I was thinking it was Mariel Le Sueur, but you said it's somebody who's still alive today. And
that's right. Ah, so you realize. Okay. All right. Okay. Think again. Gary, if you have it, send it in. Carolyn says here, Kate, as a parent of a student who loves and participates in National History Day, talk about how you find your subjects.
Oh, great question. So this new book, Rad Women Worldwide, it tells 40 stories from 31 countries. There are obviously way more than 40 rad women from all over the world and all of time. We probably researched about 200 women to kind of narrow it down and find the stories we wanted to tell. For this book in particular, a lot of the suggestions came from people who had were readers of the first book, Rad American Women, and who came to our events and would suggest people. We talked about how we were doing a worldwide book, and we opened it up to suggestions. We also used social media and then reached out to contacts from all over the world to ask people who from your country or culture would you want to see in this book. So that was really important to us to get that actual worldwide perspective, you know, to reach out to people who are from Mexico, people who are from European countries, people from China, and say, you know, who do you think should be in here? So we got a lot of feedback from people, a lot of suggestions, and then that just opened up a research process. You know, whenever I'm reading, you know, when I come across a name of a woman from history and I've never heard of her, I write it down and I look her up, and you know, and it also happens now that people are kind of always sending me stories about cool women.
Oh, you are so lucky.
I said, you know, had a long plane ride next to a couple from Peru, and we spent the entire ride talking about women from Peruvian history, and I was writing down all these names. So they kind of just come to me in this amazing way. It's the best research. And then we worked on, again, narrowing it down. We wanted to show women from every continent, so every region of the world. And we wanted to show a wide range within each region, so a range in time period, and then a range of what the women did, what field they worked in, sports or the arts, science, political leadership. And then again, we wanted to prioritize the stories of women of color, indigenous women, and women whose stories were not as well known.
And then you have the agonizing choice of trying to, knowing that you will, of course, have to leave people out that you would love to put in.
Yes. Well, you may have noticed, Carrie, in the back of the book, I do have a gigantic, like, five-page list. I have a list of 250 more women in the back of the book from almost every country in the world. And it just lists the country, the woman's name, and then just what she's known for, you know, and that's my way of getting more people into the book. But it's also a way I realize now. So to go back to this question about, you know, how do I find the women? I think that it can give readers a little taste of the research process. So people say, how did you find all this out about the women? I said, well, I looked them up. So you can try it, too. You can go to the back of the book, find the name of a woman you've never heard of. Go and Google her. Go to the library and type her into the search engine. See what happens. See what you find. And that's a really interesting lesson, both in, you know, what and how research can work. And then also, you know, how much can you find about this woman? Is there anything about her? Can you find anything in English? And if you find a lot, then why have you never heard of her? If you find almost nothing, but she's really fascinating, well, why isn't there more about her?
Yeah. So I've got Kate's book open to this back to this list, long list of women she would have loved to have featured, but that she's listed in the back. I love this. Chile, Isabel Allende, who, oh my gosh, I'm a great admirer of hers. Ana Tijoux, that's just from Chile. And then Alicia Alonso, a ballerina from Cuba. So you see that Kate is drawing from a lot of different disciplines. I mean, from the arts, from activists, from athletes, Indonesia, Kartini, educator and feminist, mm-hmm. from Mali, Aoua Keita, independence activist. Fantastic. Oh, and you also have from, I see you have Jane Campion from New Zealand, just skimming mm-hmm. this. I'd like to talk to all these women, Kate, every single one of them. I'm glad you put the list in there. Okay, to the phones, to Jennifer in Orono. I think, Jennifer, it's a rad woman, Jennifer, or it's a guess on the trivia question. Which one?
Well, it's the guess on the Minnesota rad women.
Okay.
My guess is Louise Erdrich.
And that's my choice for the name.
That's fantastic. A good one.
Oh, my gosh. Jennifer. Yeah. You could have included. My gosh, you could have filled up the entire book with rad women from Minnesota. Okay. How about that?
You know what? I could. I mean, and I will say Louise Erdrich is not in this book, but I am a huge fan of her work. I got to see her speak years ago, and I think she's an incredible thinker and writer. So that is a wonderful suggestion. And that's one of the things I love about doing these books is that it makes people guess, think of other rad women, you know, so people will say, oh, is so-and-so in your book? Is so-and-so in your book? And I say, no, but I'm so glad that you even just said her name out loud, right? There's just power in just brainstorming and getting your brain to go in that direction.
Peggy Flanagan. Hey, Peggy, if you're listening, thank you so much for tweeting out this photo. Peggy says, Wilma Mankiller was the raddest of them all. I still look to her writing for wisdom and comfort. Kate, mm-hmm. I wondered if, and I retweeted that photo, I wondered if you happened to have read Gloria Steinem's memoir and that deep friendship that she writes about with Wilma Mankiller.
Yes, I do have her new book, Her Life on the Road?
Yeah.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I got to see Gloria speak last year in San Francisco, and it was wonderful.
She was here for Talking Volumes, and we did spend some time talking about the influence that Wilma Mankiller has had on her thinking. So mm-hmm. it was interesting. To the phones to Claire in St. Paul. Hi, Claire. Hey.
My guess for the Minnesota rad woman would be Anne Bancroft.
You are so right.
Ding, 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 ding.
Claire, way to go. Okay, talk about choosing Anne, Kate, and then I'm going to ask you if you'll read just an excerpt from that bit of the book, if you would.
Sure. So, again, we wanted to show a wide range of women from a lot of different fields, and because we wanted to have someone from every continent, and so we say, we have someone from every continent, and kids are always like, well, what about Antarctica? And then I say, aha, I have two women who didn't technically live on Antarctica, but they are the first women to cross it. And so I wrote about the duo of Anne Bancroft and Liv Arneson, who were the first women to cross Antarctica on foot. And Anne Bancroft from Minnesota is one of just the world's leading polar explorers. And I was so fascinated by their story. And we also in this book wanted to include Some stories not just about individuals, but people who work together in teams.
Good.
So again, the Quinterman sisters, we have Venus and Serena, the Williams sisters. We have Marie Curie and her daughter Irene, who was also a scientist, and the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo. So we wanted to show people that work together. And Liv and Anne are an incredible example of people who worked together. So I'll read you this quick excerpt from their story. So they're on the continent of Antarctica in the year 2000 on their trek. It says, the journey was long, painful, and dangerous. On windy days, they could cover up to 60 miles. But on calm days, they made only 6 or 7. They had to leap over deep crevasses. Their knees ached and their toenails fell off. They got sunburns, frostbite, and chapped skin. To warm their fingers, they soaked them in oatmeal. They tried to stay positive, but sometimes they feared that they wouldn't make it.
That's Kate Schatz reading from her book, Rad Women Worldwide. I want to note here, Kate, I mean, I've had Anne on the show numerous times. You know, I really didn't know that when she first started getting into the explorer field, that there were a lot of people who said women just don't even belong in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, and I have this anecdote in the story that apparently at one point a man reached out to feel her bicep to see if she was strong enough to do this kind of work. And spoiler alert, she was strong enough and she did it. They crossed Antarctica. So sure. I mean, you know, they had a lot of pushback. The people didn't believe that it was, you know, a place for women, that it was something that they could be physically capable of, that, you know, that they wouldn't be mentally strong enough, all of these things. Yeah, those doubts persist, and I'd say probably every field.
And Anne is still doing a lot of great work, along with the exploring to empower young women. She's got the Anne Bancroft Foundation, so a shout out to that. Anne,
absolutely.
If you're listening, love to be talking about you on the show. 651-227-6000 for, now that we've got the trivia question, and it was Anne Bancroft, for the rad woman in your circle of friends or your family, or maybe just somebody in our region. Doesn't have to be only Minnesota. We're Wisconsin, Iowa, the Dakotas, somebody that you really admire, that you think fits that rad woman ideal. 800-242-2828 and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Right back to the conversation and your calls and your questions for us in just a minute, but to John Wanamaker now. Hi, John.
Hi, Carrie. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley says she is accepting President-elect Donald Trump's call to be ambassador to the United Nations out of a sense of duty. Haley says in a statement she'll remain in her current job until she's confirmed by the U.S. Senate. The Republican governor says she's satisfied that she will leave South Carolina on a very strong footing. Haley became South Carolina's first female and first minority governor when she took office in 2011. The man who killed a British lawmaker a week before the Brexit vote has been convicted by a jury in London. Jurors deliberated for less than 2 hours today before finding Thomas Mayer guilty in the murder of lawmaker Jo Cox. She was shot and stabbed to death in June in the area of Northern England that she represented. Witnesses say Mayer, who had white supremacist views, shouted "Britain first" as he attacked her. Jurors were told that he had pleaded not guilty, but his lawyers offered no evidence in his defense. And if you are planning on ordering from Amazon or getting packages shipped for DHL for the holidays, you may want to order early. The airline that ships packages for those companies says it's seeking a court order to get striking pilots back to work as the busy holiday shopping season kicks off. A decision by a judge is expected today. Pilots from ABX Air went on strike yesterday, saying that the airline is short-staffed and has been forcing them to work on their days off. ABX Air says the work stoppage is illegal. And the government wants smartphone makers to lock out most apps when the phone is being used by someone driving a car. The voluntary guidelines unveiled today are designed to reduce crashes caused by drivers distracted by phones. Traffic deaths spiked over 10% in the first 6 months of this year. That followed an over 7% increase in 2015. The agency says 10% of fatal crashes last year involved distracted drivers. Navigation systems would be still permitted. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
I'm Tom Weber. Next hour on NPR News, how some Minnesota lawmakers want to get rid of the Electoral College, kind of. You'll also hear about pedestrian safety in Minnesota and the newest club for you to join, the Skyway Avoidance Society. Join us at 11.
Support for this program comes from our listeners and from the Hamlin MBA, where you learn to excel in real-world leadership in 2 years, attending one night a week. Enroll now and begin in January. Hamlin.edu/MBA.
Back to the conversation now with Kate Schatz, where we're asking you about rad women in your own circle, in your own world. Man, hearing about Wilma Mankiller, Louise Erdrich, Winona LaDuc, to the phones to Paula in St. Paul. Paula, sounds like you've got a nomination for a rad woman. Tell me about it.
I do. In the early 80s, Stacy K. Offner came to the Twin Cities from New York. Mm-hmm. She was an ordained reform rabbi. And she was at Mount Sinai Temple for a few years, went from associate rabbi or assistant rabbi to associate rabbi, and came out of the closet and unfortunately was pressured to resign. Out of that came a congregation called Shir Tikva, which stands for Song of Hope. 50 families left Mount Zion. Our family was one of them.
Uh-huh.
And formed this congregation in Minneapolis. And we now have a mixed congregation, inclusive of close to 300 families.
You know, Paula, I wonder if Stacy would see herself, if Rabbi Offner would see herself as rad. What do you think?
I think perhaps now, with the way that our society has evolved, perhaps not. But during that time, it was quite a feat. Our current rabbi is gay, Rabbi Michael Latt, fabulous. Stacy went on to have a congregation in New York. Mm. And at the time, it was quite a radical thing for her to go through the rabbinate, to take a position, and then to come out. It really was.
I'm really glad for the call, Paula. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Kate, I do want to say something about the illustrations.
Yes.
They are beautiful. This is the second time you've worked with Miriam on the illustrations?
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
I want to know about the essence of the collaboration between you two.
Oh, it's such a wonderful collaboration. I'm so lucky to work with a great collaborator. And people often point out when I talk about the book, I often use we and our. You know, I say when we were researching or we were doing this, and people say, well, who's? What do you mean we? I said, this is a collaboration. And, you know, with most illustrated picture books, the author and illustrator work very separately. In fact, often they have never even met. The author doesn't see the illustrator's work. They're kept quite separate by publishers. But we're very lucky in that we get to work on this very closely. Miriam is a beautiful artist, and the work in the books is all paper cuts, which not everybody realizes. So the images are very bold and graphic. They're black and white with bright color behind them. But the images themselves are she creates by... She uses a pencil and takes a black piece of paper. She draws the portrait with pencil.
Wow.
And then she uses an X-Acto knife to cut them out.
I didn't know that. I don't think we talked about that last time you were on. Wow.
So it's a, you know, paper cutting is a tradition, an art tradition that's found in many cultures. You know, if you think about in Mexico, the kind of papel picado, the flags that are often flown that are paper cuts.
Uh-huh.
The Jewish tradition has them. In India, there's a beautiful paper cut tradition, in Japan as well. And again, so when you look at the images in the book, any part that is black, that is black paper. Mm. And any part that is white, that is white space. And if you were to take the images off the page, you'd be able to see right through them, almost like a piece of lace.
Wow. This image of Malala is fantastic. Well, all of them are, but I keep turning to this. It's got that beautiful turquoise background and this bold black and white, and Miriam's really captured a wonderful expression.
It's always hard to talk about it on the radio because
I
want everybody to see it. You know, I think Miriam is so gifted at capturing emotion in these images. And I think that the folks who are able to look through the book or even look at the images online will find there's just so much emotion in each and so much expression in all the faces that she does, again, with very simple lines. And that's what I wanted when I was thinking about who I wanted to illustrate these books. I wanted images that would be very bold and strong, but also very nuanced. And they look good far away, and they look good close up. And they also, it's so important for us that they be relatively gender neutral. You know, we want this to be a book that appeals to boys and to men just as much as it appeals to women and girls. And so often, even the books that are very empowering for young girls, they're still very gendered
That's
in their
true.
Aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, they're very pink and kind of fluffy. And so we just wanted these strong, bold, bright, colorful images. And I think Miriam really nails it.
Veronica says, and Veronica's a friend here, I love this, UFC women's bantamweight Ronda Rousey is a textbook
yes.
rad woman.
She is.
She put women's MMA on the map and is overall a powerful figure. Do you know her, Kate?
Not personally.
You admire her.
But
okay.
I am a huge fan. I have done a lot of kickboxing. I do some pretty intense weightlifting and working out myself. So I admire Ronda very much.
Elsie says, my mom is the raddest. She started her South Dakota nonprofit advocating for victims of abuse by working out of her car. So proud of her. And to the phones to Ethan in Owatonna. Hi, Ethan.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me.
I'm really glad you called. Who are you suggesting?
Emma Goldman.
Good.
Yes.
She's in the book.
The author and activist. One of my favorite books, actually, was Anarchism and Other Essays.
Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Kate, you did write about Emma Goldman.
Emma's in the book, yeah. Oh, I love Emma.
Say a little more about her. I mean, she has a lot to do with the way we think about contraception today.
She sure does. And that's, you know, again, I think Emma, for a lot of people, she's known as an anarchist and for, you know, for her work in the labor movement and socialism. But she's also one of the women responsible for birth control in the United States. She, as far as we know, was the first woman to smuggle contraception into the United States in the early 20th century. She was arrested for distributing it and for talking about it several times because it was a violation of the Comstock laws. And she was an early mentor to Margaret Sanger, who would go on to found and start what became Planned Parenthood. So Margaret was younger than Emma. They worked together. They actually published each other's work in their own publications. And she, you know, Margaret was one of the people listening to Emma's lectures and reading what Emma was writing about the importance of contraception. And Emma came to that because she worked as a midwife in the Lower East Side, in the tenement slums. And she saw these women who were dying of childbirth, who were, you know, had no medical support, and she realized that contraception was life-saving for women, that these women were dying because of these of complications from pregnancies.
You know, as you and Ethan both noted, she was known as an anarchist, and she was thought to be a dangerous radical mm-hmm. in her time. How long do you think it took to really recognize her contributions?
Oh, I mean, I think that she's still seen as a dangerous radacal by many, you know. Yeah. But I think I think she's someone who was recognized, you know, kind of in her time. But surely, you know, she continued her work throughout the 20th century. And but probably in like more contemporary radical activist, you know, world, people have kind of picked up on her, saw how hard she fought, have read her work. You know, she's someone who documented her life very extensively. You know, her autobiography is 2 incredibly dense volumes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I think that's helped with her legacy, is that she's someone who, I mean, her letters, her writing, there's so much of it out there. And you know, so she's someone who it's kind of been easy to really learn her legacy and to feel like you can understand her.
Melody says on Twitter, the rad women in my life are profs. And then she's got some Twitter handles to it. She says they turned me into a rad mm-hmm. woman.
Yes.
To the phones to Dorothy. You know, I should ask you. So what are the qualifications to be thought of as a rad woman, Kate, in your mind, yours and Miriam's?
Well, you know, so we use the word rad kind of to represent a few different things. Certainly, it's the slang term that some of us, like Miriam and I, who grew up in California, you know, meaning really awesome and really cool. But it's also short for radical. Now, that doesn't have to mean politically radical. And that's right. Like in the Emma Goldman sense, you know, but for us, someone who is a rad woman is someone who has strong beliefs, strong passions, and who perseveres and you know, doesn't back down and, you know, keeps going even when things are tough, who speaks her mind, but also stands up for others. And to me, that's one of the most important aspects, is someone who doesn't work just for themselves out of their own self-interest, but sees the importance of really lifting up everyone and fighting for all people.
I have to say that Kasha Jacqueline Nagabasera from Uganda, mm-hmm. I don't know if I've pronounced her last name right, she mm-hmm. is the epitome of the rad woman that you just described. Wow.
I She is. And she's one of the more, I'd say, probably lesser known women that I write about
Definitely.
In the book, and also very contemporary. She's quite young. She was born in 1980, which is young in my book. And she is one of the last living gay rights activists in Uganda. And I mean that very literally, because many other out prominent gay rights activists have either been killed or have had to flee the country. Homosexuality is punishable in some cases by death or by extreme prison sentences in Uganda, as it is with many countries all over the world. And she has really remained in her country. She gets death threats on a regular basis, but she has founded an organization for gay, lesbian, queer, trans, and intersex people in Uganda. And she publishes a very popular online newspaper for the gay and lesbian population there. And she, she puts herself out there. She lives in a series of safe houses. She has to kind of remain relatively underground. But she still goes on television. She was the grand marshal in the Gay Pride Parade in New York 2 years ago.
Right.
She was on the cover of Time magazine.
That's
and she's,
when I read about her. The extraordinary thing about her, Kate, is while she, as you note, she takes precautions when she's in Uganda, the government, I think, fears her a bit.
Mm-hmm.
As you've said, they've managed to either kill or chase away every other one of the activists for gay rights. And yet I think she has the kind of moral authority that maybe the government unusually is afraid to touch. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. I think that's quite right. She just will not go away. And I think that's a common thread you see throughout this book as well. Women who really just wouldn't stop and wouldn't back down. In a lot of cases, governments, repressive regimes, police forces, governments kind of assumed that they'd go away. The Madres de la Plaza de Mayo in Argentina, people thought these are just some crazy old ladies. They'll stop marching every day. even Malala Yousafzai, she was a child when she spoke out against the Taliban. And they, assumed she would just kind of go away, and she didn't. And that's, again, we see that a lot in these stories, women who just wouldn't back down and wouldn't stop kind of agitating. And I think that it can get to a point, perhaps like with Kasha, where they become so prominent that the government doesn't quite, or the repressive regime or whoever their opposition is, doesn't quite know what to do with
them.
They
don't know what to do. Yeah. Corey on Twitter says, Helen Prejean, Joan Chittister. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I'm a huge admirer of Joan Chittister's. Mm-hmm. Hannah Arendt, Deepa Ma, Joan Halifax, Steph off the page.
Robbie says, my wife Bethany Burney is mega rad.
Really?
Aside from being a mother of two children, she is an accomplished artist, violinist, and a rising star as a designer in the advertising world. She also brings beauty to life with her photography. She is the raddest woman in
lovely.
My life. I had to read that out loud. How nice, Robbie.
And that's, and that's what I love about these conversations and what I think that these books kind of inspire people to do is that, I want to be recognizing the mothers and the teachers, the professors, the designers, the wives and mothers and grandmothers, as well as recognizing, the Helen Prejean and Hannah Arendt and, the people who've made change on a larger scale. And I think it's so important to have both of those conversations, to recognize and admire the women in our everyday lives who are working incredibly hard, as well as the ones who have managed to rise to some kind of prominence in their field.
Kate, I don't usually ask writers what the next project is, but you have so many fantastic suggestions here in the book, and now that you're hearing from more, I hope there's more to come. Let me just say that. Is there?
Yes, there is more to come. I can say that we have, Miriam and I did another project that's going to be coming out next summer that I can talk about. It's a journal, actually.
Okay.
And it's going to be for writers, for readers, aimed toward younger readers to explore their own radness, you could say. So it has about 50 more beautiful illustrations by Miriam, a lot of contemporary women, and then really inspiring quotes from them. And then instead of a life story about each one or a mini biography, it has a question or a prompt based on a lot of the women's quotes. And it has blank pages, it has lined pages, it has great illustrations, and it's for people who have been inspired by these books to kind of expand on that inspiration and explore their own radness. And so that comes out next summer.
Boy, Kate.
And then we have something else in the works that we can't quite talk about yet.
Kate, can you tell I love talking about this?
I love it.
I'm really glad. So I hope we'll talk in the summer.
And that'd be wonderful.
And I wish you well with the book. Thanks much.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks so much to all the listeners that called in with their suggestions. And, you know, make that part of your conversation at the Thanksgiving table tomorrow.
Good
you know,
idea.
I think a lot of people are feeling apprehensive about Thanksgiving in this incredibly politically charged time. You know, that might be a way to kind of get people talking about something positive.
Good idea. I'll talk again with you soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
The book is called Rad Women Worldwide, Kate Schott's Miriam Klein Stahl, and you can read about it on the thread.